Hi, it's good to have your company. You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. My name is Simon Smart, and this week I've got a guest in the studio, Roy Williams, who is a former lawyer, now an author. He wrote a book a few years ago, God Actually, which got a lot of attention, and his new book is called In God They Trust, The Religious Beliefs of Australia's Prime Ministers. It's out now in stores, published by the Bible Society. Great to have you in, Roy.
Great to be here, Simon.
Now, I thought we weren't supposed to talk about religion or politics in polite company, let alone putting them together. What got you interested in doing a book like this?
Well, first of all, I should confess that religion and politics are my two favourite subjects. So this was very much a labour of love, Simon. I know they are two of the three banned dinner table topics, but nevertheless, I couldn't resist the invitation from Greg Clark at the Bible Society to, initially write an article on the subject. But the more I delved into it and the more research I did, the more I came to the view that we couldn't do justice to the topic in a mere article or even extended essay. And Greg very kindly said, well, let's go for it. Let's write a book. When I started out, I thought there might be quite a few prime ministers who really I couldn't say terribly much about. I had preconceived notions that they weren't really very religious or perhaps just formally religious without being seriously religious. But every story was of interest. In the end, I came to the view that a clear majority, 16 out of 23, were genuine believers in God. But even the seven who have to be classed as agnostics, almost all of them thought long and hard about God. There was only one, Harold Holt, who you might describe as your typical apathetic agnostic. So there was plenty of material and surprises everywhere on an individual level.
Now, do you think when the former Prime Minister Julia Gillard spoke of her unbelief, you make a distinction between that and atheism in the book. But nonetheless, people talked a lot about that. Did that make people uncomfortable, do you think? And therefore, is this book a kind of timely book in that sense?
Well, I hope so. I was interested to find that no one had ever really delved into this territory before. There'd been a few articles on the subject in recent times, but certainly no books. So it was new territory. I think ever since 9/11, ever since 2001, this subject, the interplay between religion and politics, has become more topical. Kevin Rudd certainly increased the level of discussion by trying to reconnect Labor voters to Christianity in 2006 when he took over as opposition leader. John Howard's government was, you know, well known for its promotion of Christian values. And Julia Gillard's announcement of her unbelief on the very first day of her prime ministership also put it on the map. So yes, I guess it is topical. It should be topical. It should be something we talk about more, because the conclusion I reach is that the religious beliefs of our prime ministers have always played a very large role in shaping their worldview.
It's fascinating that there haven't been more books on this, and perhaps that tells us something about ourselves and our sort of awkward relationship between religious faith and our political life or public life. Australians do tend to be uncomfortable talking about religion. Is that true of our leaders as well? Or did they sort of talk about it?
Some of them did. Some of them talked about it and wrote about it very eloquently. People like Deakin, one of the founding fathers, one of the great prime ministers. Billy Hughes, that was one of the many surprises that I found. Joe Lyons, the great prime minister in the 30s. And more recently, another surprise, Paul Keating is on the public record talking about his Catholicism. And John Howard and Kevin Rudd and, of course, Tony Abbott have not been shy about it either. So
yeah, it's difficult to assess people's beliefs. You've had to do that somewhat in this book. That's not easy to do, especially if people aren't in the habit of making those beliefs known. And our politicians don't have the same dynamic in America as you do in America, where it's almost necessary to have that belief. In Australia, there's a different dynamic going on, isn't it?
It is now, less so perhaps in the past. I mean, one of the broad themes I explore in this book is sectarianism, the Protestant-Catholic divide in Australia, which was very, very deep for decades. And I make the point that for decades, Protestantism really was almost an unofficial requirement of a non-Labor politician. On the other hand, the Labor Party was, of course, very closely connected with the Catholic Church. And that drove a lot of political issues and a lot of political discussion. So it is there, but coming back to your first observation, how do you assess it? I had a few rules of thumb, Simon. Firstly, public professions of faith, while useful, have to be read in context, historical context, and in the context of, you know, electioneering or whenever they might be made. Private statements of belief in diaries and so forth, much more persuasive. Private letters, for example, Sir Robert Menzies' private letters to his daughter were real eye-openers. And because he didn't know he was writing for posterity, I place much more reliance upon that sort of material. Similarly, anecdotes by private insiders who knew people well. So when they were speaking sort of off the record and off guard, so there's some great stuff, for example, on John Curtin and Paul Keating in that respect. Also, that's what they say, all right. Even more important, what do they actually do? Did they live it? I decided early in the piece writing this, you can't just rely on what people write or say. You have to look at their conduct. And by that I mean in their personal conduct and their political conduct. The conduct of one's private life and social conservatism in general there were two of my criteria. But it does become tricky at times. I mean, for example, I mean, just to give a slightly lurid example, I didn't feel I could ignore, for example, the evidence of Ben Chifley's affairs. He was a married man. Or of Billy McMahon's homosexuality. I mean, I actually formed the view in the end that I don't think the evidence is there that Billy McMahon was gay, but in the context of a Christian debate and given the trenchant views about homosexuality held by a lot of Christians, could I just ignore it completely? I didn't think so. They're just two examples, but it came up in virtually every chapter.
Now, the book gives weight to the ideas we've mentioned that Christian faith had a massive influence on these people, even those who might not be especially believers. Many of them were brought up, Bob Hawke's a good example, in a Christian home. What was that influence, broadly speaking, in your assessment?
Well, certainly in the case of the Labor Prime Ministers, let's take Hawke, because he's probably the best example of all. He was brought up, his father was a Congregationalist minister in South Australia and Perth. And until his early 20s, Hawke was an active Christian, president of the student Christian movement at the University of WA, and he actually lost his faith, according to his account, on a trip to India representing the Australian student Christian movement as a result of the poverty he saw. Although I speculate in the book that there had to be other reasons apart from that. But Hawke is on the record in his memoirs as saying, even though he lost his faith and has been an agnostic ever since, the basic values that his father and his uncle, who was also a Christian socialist, Premier of Western Australia in the 1950s, imbued in him, were absolutely central to his worldview. The social justice side of Christianity, the brotherhood of man, as he put it. I mean, Andrew Fisher, for example, the first great Labor Prime Minister, served three terms before 1915, and our whole welfare state, the whole notion of things like old age pensions and so forth, instituted by Fisher's governments. He was a Scots Presbyterian, raised in poverty. He worked in the coal mines as a boy. you know, the church was the very means by which he rose out of that situation. And so the early Labor Party can't be understood except in the light of both Protestant Christian socialism and the Catholic social justice angle.
It's really interesting, isn't it? Because these days, or at least in more recent times, it's less thought of in those terms. You mentioned earlier that Kevin Rudd was calling Labor back to some of its Christian roots. In another sense, he was also, wasn't he, calling Christians broadly to the Labor Party?
Yes, he was. I mean, I think obviously there were some electoral factors at play. I don't think Rudd ever sought to deny that. He was miffed that, as he perceived it, the coalition had sort of hijacked the whole Christian vote, when in fact the Labor Party had just as much claim on it historically as the coalition. And he therefore sort of raised the profile by writing articles when he became opposition leader in the Monthly, famously, and so forth. And indeed, I make the thesis in the book that his move to reconnect with Christian voters really did help in 2007. And there's electoral evidence for that, that the biggest swings to Labor were in low-income seats with high proportions of evangelical Protestant Christian voters. And, of course, Julia Gillard, fairly or unfairly, simply just lost that demographic completely. It obviously had a big effect.
Now, we were talking about Kevin Rudd. You assess him in the book, and as you do with the other prime ministers who are believers on that score that you mentioned. I have to ask this. If you were writing that assessment today, given the latest announcements on asylum seekers and the Papua New Guinea deal and so on, would your assessment be different?
It would. Not fundamentally, but I have to say that from a personal point of view, I'm extremely disappointed with both sides of politics. But the PNG solution, so-called, is just yet another chapter in this rather sorry history of our country since 2001. I don't know why we can't get over it, and it's very sad. I don't blame Kevin Rudd for it. He inherited a ghastly moral political problem twice. Some people say he made it worse by his more compassionate policies the first time around. This is a very complicated issue. And
Paul Keating, on your score, comes out as the, if we can do this, he comes out as the most impressive in terms of his Christian commitment. That will surprise some. It'll draw, as you say, it'll draw howls of protest from others. But why did you come to that assessment?
Simply, Simon, because when I looked at my eight criteria, and they're laid out fairly and squarely in the book, he seemed to tick most of the boxes. Orthodox theology, anti-war, egalitarian sort of economic position, social conservatism, righteous private life. And the factor that actually tipped the scales in his favour, moral courage, particularly on the issue of human rights, which has been a black spot for too many PMs, Christian and non-Christian. Obviously a flawed man, like we all are, but I just applied my criteria and he came out well. Now, I realise that this is a highly subjective judgment. Views will differ across the party political divide, but that was the way I looked at it. And I just want to get debate going as to what we should be looking for in our leaders. If you agree with me that Keating really did live his Catholicism politically, then people might come to the view that, well, perhaps we should be following his example more. What did he do that others are not doing? On the other hand, if you disagreed with some of the things he did, well, it's a warning sign.
Well, it's a fascinating book. It's going to get a lot of conversations going, dinner parties or otherwise. The book is called In God They Trust, The Religious Beliefs of Australian Prime Ministers from 1901 to 2013. This is a great addition to that discussion. Thanks for coming in to talk about it.
My pleasure, Simon. Thank you.